intensest of need for water, and it may be that, to persons so suffering, water has been responsively transported. But there have been cases of extremest need for water to die by. One can think of situations in which more frenziedly have there been prayers for water, for death, than ever for water to live by. New York, Sunday, February 4, 1892. That, after the burial of Frances Burke, of Dunkirk, N.Y., her relatives, suspecting that she had been in a trance, had her body exhumed. The girl was found dead in a coffin that was full of water. It was the coroner's opinion that she had been buried alive, and had been drowned in her coffin. No opinion as to the origin of the water was published. 20. The importance of the invisible. That I'd starve to death, in the midst of eatables, were it not for the invisible means of locomotion by which I go and get them, and the untouchable and unseeable processes by which I digest them. That every stout and determined materialist, arguing his rejection of the unseeable and the untouchable, lives in a phantom existence, from which he would fade away were it not for his support by invisibles. The heat of his body and heat has never been seen. His own unseeable thoughts, by which he argues against the existence of the invisible. Nobody has ever seen steam. Electricity is invisible. The science of physics is occultism. Experts in the uses of steam and electricity are sorcerers. Mostly we do not think of their practices as witchcraft, but we have an opinion upon what would have been thought of them, in earlier stages of the dark age we're living in. Or by the occult, or by what is called the supernatural, I mean something like an experience that I once saw occur to some acquaintances of mine. A neighbor had pigeons, and the pigeons loafed on my window sill. They were tempted to come in, but for weeks, stretched necks, fearing to enter. I wished they would come in. I went 4 blocks to get them sunflower seeds. Though I will go thousands of miles for data, it is most unusual for me to go 4 blocks, it's 8 blocks, counting both ways for anybody. One time I found 3 of them, who had flown through an open window, and were upon the frame of a closed window. I went to them slowly, so as not to alarm them. It seems that I am of a romantic disposition, and, if I take a liking to anybody, who seems female, like almost all birds, I want her to perch on my finger. So I put out a finger. But all 3 birds tried to fly through the glass. They could not learn, by rebuffs, but kept on trying to escape through the glass. If, back in the coop, these pigeons could have told their story, it would have been that they were perched somewhere, when suddenly the air hardened. Everything in front was as clearly visible as before, but the air had suddenly turned impenetrable. Most likely the other pigeons would have said, "Oh, go tell that to the sparrows." There is a moral in this, and it applies to a great deal in this book, which is upon the realization of wishes. I had wished for pigeons. I got them. After the investigation by the 3 pioneers, all of them came in. There were 9 of them. It was the unusually warm summer of 1931, and the windows had to be kept open. Pigeons on the backs of chairs. They came up on the table, and inspected what I had for dinner. Other times they spent on the rug, in stately groups and processions, except every now and then, when they were not so dignified. I could not chew them out, because I had invited them. Finally, I did get screens, but it takes weeks to be so intelligent. So the moral is in the observation that, if you wish for something, you had better look out, because you may be so unfortunate as to get it. It is better to be humble and contented with almost nothing, because there's no knowing what something may do to you. Much is said of the cruelty of nature, but, when a man is denied his heart's desire, that is mercy. But I am suspicious of all this wisdom, because it makes for humility and contentment. These thoughts are community thoughts, and tend to suppress the individual. They are corollaries of mechanistic philosophy, and I represent revolt against mechanistic philosophy, not as applying to a great deal, but as absolute. Nevertheless, by the occult, or the supernatural, I do not mean that I think that it is altogether exemplified by the experience of the pigeons. In our existence of law lawlessness, I conceive of two magics, one as representing unknown law, and the other as expressing lawlessness or that a man may fall from a roof, and alight unharmed, because of anti-gravitational law, and that another man may fall from a roof, and alight unharmed, as an expression of the exceptional, of the defiance of gravitation, of universal inconsistency, of defiance of everything. London Times, October. Oh, well, just as an exception of our own, never mind the data, this time take my word for it that I could cite instances of remarkable falls, if I wanted to. It looks to me as if, for instance, some fishes climb trees, as an expression of lawlessness, by which there is somewhere an exception to the generalization that fishes must be aquatic. I think that thou shalt not was written on high, addressed to fishes. Whereupon a fish climbed a tree. Or that it is law that hybrids shall be sterile and that, not two, but three, animals went into a conspiracy, out of which came the okapi. There is a law of specialization. Evolutionists make much of it. Stores specialize, so that dealers in pants do not sell prunes. But then appear drug stores, which sell drugs, books, soups, and mousetraps. I have had what I think is about the average experience with magic. But, except in several periods, I have taken notes upon my experiences, and most persons do not do this, and forget. We forget so easily that I have looked over notes, and have come upon details of which I had no remembrance. From records of my own experiences, I take an account of a series of small occurrences, several particulars of which are of importance to our general argument. I was living in London, 39 Marchmont Street, WC1. I was gathering data, in the British Museum Library. In my searches, I had noted instances of pictures falling from walls, at times of poltergeist disturbances, but I note here that my data upon physical subjects, such as earthquakes and auroral beams and lights on dark parts of the moon, were about 5-1, as compared with numbers of data upon matters of psychic research. Later, the preponderance shifted the other way. The subject of pictures falling from walls was in my mind, but it was much submerged by other subjects and aspects of subjects. It was so inactive in my mind that, when I was told of several pictures that had fallen from walls in our house, I put that down to household insecurities, and paid no more attention. The abbreviations in the notes are A, for my wife, Mrs. M, for the landlady, E, the landlady's daughter, the C's the tenants upstairs. According to me, this is not the unsatisfactoriness of so many stories about a Mr. X, or a Mrs. Y, because, according to me, only two of us, whom I identify, were more than minor figures. Also, we may suspect that, of these two, one was rather more central than the other, according to me. However, also, I suspect that, if he should tell this story, I'd be put down, much minored, as Mr. F. A and I occupied the middle floor, which was of two rooms, one of them used by us as a kitchen, though it was furnished to rent as a furnished room. March 11, 1924. See Charles Fort's notes, letter E, box 27. I was reading last night, in the kitchen, when I heard a thump. Sometimes I am not easily startled, and I looked around in a leisurely manner, seeing that a picture had fallen, glass not breaking, having fallen upon a pile of magazines in a corner. Two lace curtains at sides of window. Picture fell at foot of left curtain. Now, according to my impression, the bottom of the right-hand curtain was vigorously shaken, for several seconds, an appreciable length of time after the fall of the picture. Morning of the 12th, find that one of the brass rings, on the back of the picture frame, to which the cord was attached, had been broken in two places, metal bright at the fractures. A reminded me that, in the C's room, two pictures had fallen recently. I have kept this little brass ring, broken through in one place, and the segment between the breaks, hanging by a metal shred at the point of the other break. The picture was not heavy. The look is that there had been a sharp, strong pull on the picture cord, so doubly to break this ring. March 18, 1924 about 5 p.m., I was sitting in the corner, where the picture fell. There was a startling, crackling sound, as if of window glass breaking. It was so sharp and loud that for hours afterward I had a sense of alertness to dodge missiles. It was so loud that Mrs. C., upstairs, heard it. But nothing had broken a window pane. I found one small crack in a corner, but the edges were grimy, indicating that it had been made long before. March 28, 1924 This morning, I found a second picture or the fourth, including the falls in the rooms upstairs on the floor, in the same corner. It had fallen from a place about 3 feet above a bureau, upon which are piled my boxes of notes. It seems clear that the picture did not ordinarily fall, or it would have hit the notes, and there would have been a heartbreaking mess of notes all over the floor. Oh, very. Sometimes I knock over a box of notes, and it's a job of hours to get them back in their places. I don't know whether it has any meaning, but I think about this, the accounts of pictures falling from walls, which were among these notes. The glass in the picture was not broken. This time, the cord, and not a ring, was broken. I quickly tied the broken cord, and put the picture back. I suppose I should have had A for a witness. Partly I did not want to alarm her, and partly I did not want her to tell, and start a ghost scare centering around me.